Welcome to the United Soccer Coaches Podcast, presented by League Apps. League Apps is the leading youth sports management platform, providing organizations with the technology and professional development they need to run, grow, and win. On a mission to bring the benefits of sport to kids everywhere, they go beyond technology to provide leaders with professional development and relationship building, and to work with sports-based organizations to address issues of accessibility and equality. To learn more, find them at leagueapps.com or as League Apps on all of the social networks. Now, here's the host of the show, longtime soccer broadcaster and voice of United Soccer Coaches, Dean Linke.
I am Dean Linke. This is the United Soccer Coaches Podcast. It is presented by League Apps, and we have five wonderful guests. We kick off with Leslie Gallimore, who is set to receive the Walt Chisowitz Lifetime Achievement Award. Leslie Gallimore will open the show. After Leslie, Mike Cullina, who is the CEO of U.S. Club Soccer and is a youth representative on the U.S. Soccer Board of Directors, has formally announced his candidacy for Vice President of the U.S. Soccer Federation. Mike Cullina is on the show. After Mike headed into his 10th year as the head coach at Howard, former U.S. international, almost made the 90 World Cup team. He's got a daughter that's playing in NWSL, a son who's playing professionally over in Sweden. Talking about Howard head men's soccer coach, Philip Zhao. What a wonderful human being. Philip Zhao is on the show. And then we finish talking to all of the presenters with the Joe Cummings-led Club Management Administration Diploma, which will take place during the United Soccer Coaches Convention in Anaheim. We have talked to everybody but Carlos Acebe and Blake Decker. We talked to both of them to wrap up the show. And it starts after this message from our presenting sponsor, League Apps.
We bet you didn't get into this business for the back office duties. That's why we created League Apps, the industry's leading youth sports management platform, so you can spend less time with busy work and more time doing what you love. League Apps provides organizations with the technology and professional development they need to run, grow, and win. Go to leagueapps.com to learn more. League Apps is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the United Soccer Coaches Podcast. Welcome back to the United Soccer Coaches Podcast, presented by League Apps. Once again, here's the host of the show, Dean Linke.
On November 20th, the Walt Chisowitz Fund, a charitable fund of the United Soccer Coaches Foundation, announced that Leslie Gallimore would receive the Walt Chisowitz Lifetime Achievement Award. She will present her award during the Walt Chisowitz Awards Ceremony and Reception on January 13, 2024, in conjunction with the association's 84th annual convention in Anaheim, California. Leslie Gallimore will be honored alongside two of the most iconic goal scorers in U.S. soccer history, Brandi Chastain and Paul Caligiuri, each to receive a Walt Chisowitz Distinguished Playing Career Award. The Walt Chisowitz Fund was founded after his passing in 1994 to honor his memory and promote his legacy as former U.S. national team coach and director of coaching. The fund helps provide coaching education, scholarships, and grants to aspiring coaches and developing soccer organizations through its fundraising efforts in partnership with the United Soccer Coaches Foundation. Leslie Gallimore participated in 21 NCAA tournaments, including three as a player at the University of California, 83, 84, and 86, three more as their assistant coach, and 15 as head coach at the University of Washington in the period between 1994 and 2019. She retired after a 26-year coaching career at Washington with an overall record of 270, 218, and 49, a record of victories ranking in the top 25 of D1 women's soccer. In March of 2001, Leslie Gallimore served as assistant coach for the U.S. women's national team at the Algarve Cup in Portugal. She later worked for the U.S. State Department's Empowering Women and Girls Through Sports initiative, traveling to Morocco, Ethiopia, and Israel, working with their coaches, as well as coaches from Tunisia and Libya. In June 2020, Leslie Gallimore was appointed as the first ever commissioner of the Girls Academy League, developing more than 1,300 female athletes in 91 clubs. As an inspirational leader, Leslie Gallimore was named the first ever recipient of the Carla Overbeck Leadership Award by U.S. Soccer. She is also a coaching mentor as part of U.S. Soccer's She Champions Mentorship Program. and served as president of United Soccer Coaches in 2018. Her administrative career has now been highlighted with her recent appointment as general manager of the OL Reign in the National Women's Soccer League. And with that, I welcome in Leslie Gallimore, as we could keep on going. But Leslie, before we came on the air, the coolest thing about this is people are obviously recognizing all of the great work you've done, but you now have this really cool job too. So like, life is good for Leslie Gallimore.
Yeah, it is. And I just listened to you read that, Dean. First of all, thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, my friend. We go way back. We've had a lot of good times over the years, and I'm excited for the convention in Anaheim, but I want to thank you for having me on, and all the kind words. I mean, listening to to what you were saying there, no wonder I'm tired. Anyway, I'm just, you know, I'm thrilled to be able to, one, go to the convention in Southern California, where I'm from. It's a little bit like receiving the Carla Overbeck Award. It was in San Diego. I'm from Southern California. So to be able to be, you know, in my hood a little bit for the convention this year, where I can have some family and friends come and attend, is just really special. So yeah, and my current job, extremely cool. You know, we made it to the final this year. I feel like a bit of a passenger. I hopped on the train, the crazy train, mid-season, and we had that crazy final with Rapinoe's last year and all kinds of things going on in the league. But it's wild. You know, just when I thought I was slowing down, this opportunity came around, and it's been nothing but fun. And we're in the midst of all the chaos in the league right now with the expansion draft and college draft and free agency. And it's just learning something new every day and just learning to take it in and hopefully be productive. So it's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's a true testament to the old saying that my dad always said, is that good things happen to good people. And, you know, the fascinating thing is, I think all of us at some point, you know, when we get past 50, we wonder about retirement. But, you know, look, you don't need to retire if you're doing what you love and everything is going the right way. I think the NWSL has got it together and you're, you know, living the dream, Leslie. So, I mean, now you can truly enjoy it. I mean, you don't need to retire.
Yeah. Well, you know, the coolest thing about this job is obviously it's my hometown club. I'm a Sounders Till You Die fan. I've been a Reign fan and season ticket holder since day one. I've been, you know, Laura Harvey and I have, you known each other since the day she arrived from across the pond and started the job here in Seattle, left and then came back. So be able to work with her and start to build something as the league, as you said, is going in a really good direction, a really positive direction. The timing couldn't have been better. And so, yeah, it's I feel very fortunate and very blessed to have the opportunity, and I'm going to give it my all. And I've always said, you know, you talk about this retirement thing. I've never really thought about that. I love to travel. I love the game. I love my downtime. But I just feel like life goes so fast. You know, here we are, you know, it's 2023 going on 2024, and it doesn't feel like I'm 4 years out of the University of Washington. And here I've had two huge jobs since, you know, after a 26 year career at one place. It doesn't feel like it's 4 years past the pandemic. It doesn't feel like things have just been flying. And so I've always wanted to give back to the sport that's given me so much. I've always wanted to have an impact however I can. And so to be doing it at the professional women's level, where I tell the players constantly that I would give two arms and two legs to be able to go back and do what they're doing right now. And it's, you know, it's not a thing to guilt them at all, but it's just so cool to be a part of what a lot of us in my generation, you know, dreamt about way back when, you know, we really got serious about the game. So to be a part of it now in our country, in my hometown, it's special. So, yeah, you got no complaints on my end, except for maybe a little bit of the sleep thing and my dog's neglect and my friends and family a little bit neglect currently, but that'll right itself as soon as I live through one full cycle of GMing and the sale of the club.
Right. There's a little bit of work to do that you know, comes with it for sure. But, you know, along the way, Leslie, I think it's fair to say, and not sycophantic, that you have appreciated the beacons of the sport. And certainly Walt Chisowicz is clearly one of the beacons, right? So that's pretty cool to have your name attached to his name.
Yeah, just when I thought being attached to Carla Overbeck's name was cool, along comes Walt Chisowicz. So, you know, it's, again, these are people I know and have watched and followed and knew and know what their legacy means. So I just, for other people that don't have this happen to them, I can't say enough about how humbling it is, really, truly, to be associated with people like them. And Walt and Gene and their family and the foundation and Thomas and Dr. Joe and all the people that have reached out to me and the past award winners to be named amongst them is just beyond extraordinary. And so I don't take it lightly. And I'm soaking it in, and I feel, just, I don't know, just honored beyond belief. But I do, you know, with Walt in particular, and kind of my path, especially as a female in the game and having gone straight from being a player to being a coach and being around so many great coach educators in particular, and so many great coaches and colleagues in my career that I've learned from and taken from. And when you go back and you read about Walt, and when you go back and just the Chisowicz family and their legacy in America, they're American royalty, really, when it comes to kickstarting the game in this country and making sure that it stuck. And the education piece and just being down in the trenches and helping other people get on board with your passion and your love for what you do is what Walt did. It's so amazing for people that were close to him to hear them speak about him. If when I'm long gone, there's people still saying that about me, then I will have lived a good life.
Well, they'll be saying it about you. So you've lived a good life. And part of that life has been a strong and proud attachment to then the NSCAA, now United Soccer Coaches.
Yeah, I have been attached to United Soccer Coaches. That's one of those other things that I think it was probably Waxler or Marsha, or it was just the woman gang that they corner you and make you do things. But when they wrote me into running for the board and getting re-involved after I'd taken a little time off from really participating as much as I did, I took a little hiatus from some of the committees and such. But I came back and I ran for the board and I served for 6 years and was a president and past president, obviously. And it's another one of those areas where you get outside of yourself and your own little circle of things. So for me to be able, and in coaching education through United Soccer Coaches, NSCAA, and US Soccer, to be able to meet other educators, other coaches that weren't in the same realm as me. They were beyond D1 coaches. They were beyond women's soccer coaches. These are like some of the best people I've met. Some of the people that have been stalwarts at the D3 level or the JC level, or the number of people from, you know, overseas that I've met that have come in as guest clinicians and mentors that I've worked with and for, it just has enriched everything I've been able to do. And I've been able to take and gather so much from all of those people. And it's cliche, but United Soccer Coaches, it's united me to some of the best people in the world, legitimately, in the game. So it's the culmination of everyone coming together in January, and obviously a pitch for the convention. But it's one of those things that, again, in COVID, when we finally went back to being in person, you just realized what you missed. And it's that gathering of all the different minds and all the new, you know, things that are happening in our sport and all the evolution of men's and women's soccer across the world, that there's nothing quite like it. And to just be able to see your friends again that you miss is really, really unique in the sport landscape. You don't really hear about it much in other sports.
And you kind of get a little double layer of frosting because you have two of the most iconic goals ever scored also being recognized with Brandy and Paul Caligiuri. That's pretty cool too, Leslie.
The Paul Caligiuri shot heard around the world. I remember it. You probably do as well. Do you remember how fuzzy those broadcasts were on the TV?
Yeah, I was already interested with U.S. soccer when they scored the goal. I was with you remember Brenda and Keith Walker, who used to,
yeah,
I was at their house watching the game. Like, it was crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I can't remember who I was watching it with, but I remember it. But at the time, it was just when Karen Jennings and Jim Gabera had started dating. I don't think they were engaged or married yet. I don't know, but they are married still now. So Jim was on the team. So we followed, obviously, the men's team really closely. I had just started working at San Diego State, I believe, and Marcelo and Eric had just finished up. And so that era of men's national team players that wore that awesome denim uniform behind you, a lot of them were, people that were from our era, so to speak. And that was a crazy game. And then Brandy, no one ever believes me except for the four people that were sitting around me at the Rose Bowl in 1999. And I'd known Brandy for a really long time. And obviously I'm still very close to her. And I was sitting, I think, with my mom, Tara, who worked with me and played for me, and maybe one other person. And when it came Brandy's time to take the PK, first of all, I wasn't watching when Joy took hers. I was panicked about Joy because she played with and for me at Cal. And I just thought, oh my gosh, I was sick to my stomach for her. When Brandy stepped up, or when I could figure out where she was going to go in the lineup because Michelle was out, I said to the people around me, I said, oh, Brandy's going to nail this and she's going to rip her clothes off, is what I said. And my mom, and my mom, may she rest in peace, can't corroborate that right now, but my other friend can, and the 10 people sitting around me, just their heads whipped around when it happened. And I said, told you. But I'll never forget that moment. I'll never forget that summer. And I'll never forget how that and all of those women, Carla Overbeck included, and Foudy and Joy and Mia and Michelle, how they and the women before them catapulted the game to the next level. And it hasn't been without its little troughs and digs and whatever, but they raised the level of what the expectations of women's soccer in the world could be. And it's just to be a part of that piece of history and know that Brandy and Paul both are, riding the Walt Chisowitz, honors with me is super cool. It's really cool.
Amen.
You got to love the West Coast flavor as well.
Oh my gosh, load it up. You got to do it. We're headed to Anaheim, so it's got to be there. And, hearing you tell that story reminds me how much I enjoyed calling your couple of your games back in the days of the Fox Soccer Game of the Week. You're such a great storyteller, Leslie. That is fantastic. And we'll end with this as we're kicking off a jam-packed show this week with Leslie Gallimore, who will receive the Walt Chisowitz Lifetime Achievement Award. I'm going to say it one more time, Leslie, and you give me one sentence to truly tell us what that means. Leslie Gallimore to receive the Walt Chisowitz Lifetime Achievement Award.
Wow, one sentence. Let's see. Without using words I've already used that are just overused in this world, I will say that I sit in a space right now in my life where anything that comes my way that recognizes any part of what I've done that others see as good in life and good in the game for others, I can only smile and thank everyone around me that's helped me get here.
So well said. Congratulations, Leslie Gallimore, and thanks for kicking off this week's United Soccer Coaches podcast.
Thanks so much, Dean.
All right, when we return, we'll be joined by Mike Cullina, the United Soccer Coaches podcast, presented by League Apps.
The home of all coaches is headed to Anaheim, California. Join us at the 2024 United Soccer Coaches Convention, held January 10th through the 14th. For our first time on the West Coast in over 5 years, we're pulling out all the stops with brand new special topics diplomas, world-class presenters like Randy Waldrum and Carla Thompson, one-of-a-kind pop-ups, 200-plus education sessions, and so much more. Register now by going to unitedsoccercoachesconvention.org. Register before December 14th to beat the price increase and join us in Anaheim.
Welcome back to the United Soccer Coaches podcast. So pleased to have a repeat guest on, Mike Cullina, who is with U.S. Club Soccer, announced on November 28th that he is going to run for the U.S. Soccer Federation's vice president. And he starts this way. He says, "Dear U.S. Soccer members and fans, after consulting with family, friends, and colleagues from across the U.S. soccer landscape, I, Mike Cullina, am announcing my candidacy for Vice President of the United States Soccer Federation. I'm speaking for Mike as I read this. I'm currently a youth representative on the U.S. Soccer Board of Directors and was previously elected as the at-large representative. I am the CEO of U.S. Club Soccer, U.S. Soccer National Association and member of U.S. Adult Soccer Association. I am also a USSF A licensed coach, certified referee, coach educator, and a former state director of coaching and U.S. Youth Soccer Region 2 coach. Having spent an entire career in the game as a coach, administrator, referee, and board member, I am uniquely qualified to represent and work for the entire membership. Collectively, we have an opportunity to leverage a once-in-a-lifetime series of major events to positively impact and grow the game in all its forms like no other time in U.S. soccer history. Wow, is that ever true? And with that, I welcome in Mike Cullina. Mike, welcome back to the United Soccer Coaches Podcast.
It is always a pleasure, Dean Lenke, to join you and join United Soccer Coaches, who has been an incredibly important part of my journey. So happy to be here. Thanks for taking some time.
Your journey is fascinating and it's well planned, I think. I mean, every step you take, I think, is well structured. I've told you that before. And you have a belief that you can be a successful vice president, and you have some very legitimate beliefs behind that. I'd like you to share them if you can.
Yeah, I joined the board, you know, a few years ago, and I've served a couple of different roles and served on a bunch of committees and worked with a lot of the senior staff. Got to know Will Wilson very well. Obviously, I've gotten to know JT Batson very well. Worked with Carlos Cordero, worked with Cindy Parlow-Cohn, and just really had a chance to kind of take it all in and learn and understand the dynamics of U.S. soccer, and came to the conclusion that the role of the vice president is a critically important one in terms of just being a trusted partner for all of those groups. The president is a volunteer role, and I hope we can change that, but as a volunteer role, really has a lot on our shoulders, and JT's built an incredible staff there. And so for us to be able to be partners, to move a lot of the initiative, the strategic pillars together, I think is really important. Just understanding the board dynamics and having gained the respect of the board, being put on some pretty important working groups and committees as well, I think it's important to be able to be a part of the board, but be respected by them as somebody who does listen, but does have a voice and will speak an opinion for sure, even if it's not necessarily the most popular one. I don't know of many more folks who have a better understanding of our entire membership. I think to be able to empathize and understand where our membership lives, you have to have experienced it in the last 30 years. That has been my life. That has been my career, whether it's now with U.S. Club Soccer or as a state director of coaching for Nebraska Soccer Association and working for a number of different clubs, coaching in the Development Academy, coaching in the ECNL, coaching recreational players and other competitive players. You just can't have an understanding of the membership if you haven't lived it. I do have strong relationships. I think folks will be really amazed to hear that the CEO of U.S. Club Soccer can have so many positive relationships within state associations, with leadership at U.S. Youth Soccer, with leadership of USASA. But I think leadership and members of the Athletes Council and the Professional Council, including the professional leagues, and I think having these relationships built on trust and integrity is incredibly important for a vice president to walk in. I think you have to be collaborative. We've built clubs, built relationships between clubs, built collaborative clubs to participate in the DA and now the ECNL. But more than that, just be fair to other members of the organization. I think my time as the at-large was a very enlightening time for me personally to understand not only just traditional football or soccer as we know it, but to understand the disability community, futsal, and other underserved communities across the country, and to be fair to them. It was very enlightening, and I really enjoyed the 2 years I had there as their representative, and also represented them for an extra year on the task force for the governance piece when we had to figure out a way to reorganize U.S. soccer governance structure. You know, I've shown a commitment to the Federation. I will vote on the board in the best interest of the Federation. And I think, and we tell our staff here, if it's good for U.S. soccer, it's good for soccer. And we need a strong Federation, and we have to put the needs of all in front of the needs of one. And then we can take care of the 118 members if the Federation is built with strong strategic pillars, a strong foundation, and really making the right decisions. In the last few years, as everybody knows, has been an incredibly difficult time. And the leadership that Cindy has shown through that time has built a strong foundation. And now we need to leverage that on a go forward. I think the last piece, and something that we have gone through a transition where Carlos had to step down, made a very strong decision and one that I respect quite a bit for the good of the Federation, as I was just talking about. And so a vice president has to be able and willing to step in immediately and take us to the next AGM until we can find a replacement through an election of the National Council. So those are the kind of the six pillars: trusted partner, understanding of the membership, building foundations, collaboration and fairness, commitment to a stronger Federation, and prepared to serve. I think without all of those six, we will not have a vice president that is most equipped to serve.
You're hearing the voice of the CEO of U.S. Club Soccer, Mike Cullinaugh, who on November 28th announced his commitment to run for vice president of U.S. Soccer. You talked about those six pillars. You also have six other key areas that you want to address if elected as vice president of U.S. Soccer. I'd like you to hit those as well, Mike, please.
Well, to be clear, I'm going to address these whether I'm elected or not. These are critically important right now issues, and I'm working on them every day, working on them with senior staff, with staff at the Federation, with our staff here, with partners across the youth and adult landscapes, the professional landscape. So these things continue. I just think that while I'm not big on titles, I do think the gravitas of the position of vice president will give a little bit more visibility to these and allow us to move them forward maybe with some more urgency. Safeguarding and the Center for Safe Sport are clearly front and center for everybody in the membership who has to deal with these issues. Now, look, I think we can talk about the history in the past that we want, but we're now looking forward. And what Cindy did to say, we are going to be transparent with the Yates investigation. We are going to make sure that in order for us to move forward, we have to recognize the problems, and now we're going to address them. We're really doing a lot of work, and some policy changes are coming to be able to go on the Hill and work with Congress to fix some of the glaring issues related to the Center for Safe Sport is critically important as well. So it's not just policies, not just safeguarding, and the work that we're doing here within our organization. It's across the country in the Center for Safe Sport. We are in a referee crisis. No question about it. We're in a referee crisis. One of the reasons I took the reins as the chair of the referee committee for U.S. Soccer is because I do want to address this issue. And working with Sherry Summers and her team out of U.S. Soccer in recent member meetings to get feedback from state associations and other member organizations, the three futsal groups, the military, United Soccer Coaches was there, obviously, Say Soccer, U-Triple. So all of these groups who were there, let's make sure that we all understand and identify the issues, and now we can go fix them. And some of them are strategic, some of them are policy, some of them are structural, a lot of them are behavioral in terms of the sideline behavior, which is the third piece. And so, you know, the referee crisis and sideline behavior are tied together. But coming out of COVID, we've seen a spectator behavior that is not okay. It's just not appropriate. Racial and discriminatory language in our sport is, and I think in every sport and every walk of life in society is something that's gross. It's something that we cannot accept. It has become a large issue for all of our leagues, for all of our clubs. And I think that U.S. Soccer has to take a leading role in addressing this, establish policies, establish hearing panels to just eradicate. If you can't behave, if you can't treat people with respect, you don't belong in our sport. This is a privilege, not a right. The elite player pathway, we understand Alphabet Soup. We understand the network of scouting and identification that is challenging in a country our size with so many different scouting networks. It's time to pull some of that together. It's time to create better efficiencies in our identification. It's time to go in places where we're not, to find players we're not finding. And the elite player pathway really goes to three places. Most of my colleagues spend time figuring out a way to help them get to college. Critically important. We have leagues and programs that are ensuring pathways into the professional game, both domestic and abroad. From a federation standpoint, we haven't won a youth World Cup. Our success on the youth stage has not been what it should be given the capabilities of our country. So when we talk about the elite player pathway, we also have to understand those three things that are not the same, but come from the same pool of players. And so how do we pull that together and how do we work together to make sure that these high performing players have those opportunities while not leveraging the other 99%+ of players to have to participate in a world that is inappropriate for them, whether it's cost or travel, et cetera. And then the last piece is unifying the amateur landscape. We understand at US Club Soccer that we've been disruptors for a couple of decades, but we also understand that we can be part of the solution to pull this thing back together. Dr. Pete and I are aligned in this, John Mata, Michael Karen from AYSO, we're aligned in this idea that there can be a better way and that what has been, but what is it today and what should it be? And let's work toward that. And I think given the platform, I can help accelerate some of these conversations. But regardless of the election outcomes, I'm passionate about them. And I'm going to work to ensure that we are better at each of these different areas than we are today.
I feel your passion, brother. It's Mike Cullinough, the CEO of U.S. Club Soccer, a longtime representative as well on the U.S. Soccer Board of Directors. He is running for vice president. I want to read his final lines in this letter that was released on November 28th. Again, these are Mike Cullinough's words. He says, as vice president, I will request to chair the member advisory committee while continuing as chair of the referee committee, vice chair of the Yates implementation committee, and remaining a member of the technical development and commercial committees. I look forward to expanding on these areas, hearing more about the issues facing our membership, and speaking with you to discuss how my experience of the game has prepared me to gain your support as the next vice president of U.S. Soccer. And he very much encourages anyone to reach out to him directly to ask him questions, which I think says a lot about who you are, Mike. We started by saying that we are walking up on a big time. You know, the 94 World Cup changed my life. Mike Cullinough, I'm not sure everybody realizes how much the 2026 World Cup is going to change so many lives for the better. Now is the time to have the right leadership, including at vice president.
Well, hopefully 27 as well. So hopefully we can do a back-to-back. But absolutely, I was at the Brazil U.S. game on July 4th. These opportunities, it's even hard to understand what this is going to look like in 26. I think we know what we think we know, but I think it'll be bigger than that. We don't want to just focus on the event itself. We want to make sure that we're doing the work in advance so that we can prepare for the growth of the game on the back end and that the game is safe for participants, that it has an environment of inclusivity for all of its membership. But we have to do the work now. We have to prepare for that now. Otherwise, it'll just be short-lived and we won't be able to leverage and take advantage of it. So yeah, I think the 24 election and preparing for 26. And again, the vice president is a partner to the CEO and the president. It is not the president. I am not going to be setting the direction. I will be in discussions. I will be certainly, as I am now, hopefully a trusted advisor and moving along the way. But I want to be the conduit with our membership so that when folks have an issue, they know that they can have somewhere to come and discuss, and that their voice gets directly to senior leadership at U.S. Soccer. And that preparation for 26, that preparation for 27, and then what's to come on the back end of that, 28, right? We've got the Olympics as well. So it is a cool time for sure, but it needs to not just be on the elite side of the game. It needs to be about how are we welcoming more players in at every level, and preparing our environment for them to stay as lifelong fans. And you're a testament to it. Anyone who listens to this podcast knows, your career and what 94 did, and you're not alone. I'm not alone. And 2026, 2027 will do that for the next generation. And hopefully you know, some 20, 30 years after that, somebody who will have fallen in love with the sport for the first time then will be talking to the next Dean Linke on the United Soccer Coaches podcast about serving.
Amen. Mike Colonna, you have been so pragmatic, so systematic in all the right ways in helping U.S. soccer in so many levels, including U.S. club soccer and everything else you have done. If folks heard nothing else but what you say right now about what it would mean for you to be vice president of U.S. soccer, what do you want to leave folks with, Mike?
The stronger the federation is, the better U.S. soccer is, the better soccer is. And the better it is for all of us who participate in and love this game.
Boom. Mike Colonna, you're welcome anytime. Want to wish you all the best of luck in your run, certainly a position I believe you deserve. And I look forward to seeing you at the convention and then also seeing you at the ECNL AGM and symposium as well, as you're everywhere, which I think is important to what you do. Mike Colonna, thanks for being on the United Soccer Coaches podcast.
Dino, thank you very much. United Soccer Coaches, thank you for what you've meant to me.
Always, always enjoy spending time with Mike Colonna, and I want to wish him the best as he runs for vice president of U.S. soccer. Coming up next, we meet the 10-year top man at Howard. Philip Zhao played at Howard. He now has a daughter, Mia, who's playing in the NWSL. He has a son, Joe, who has appeared with the U.S. national team at so many levels, who's playing overseas in Sweden. And Philip Zhao was a great player, almost made the 90 team, was in the pool for the 94 team. But it's what he does for others that really makes him even more spectacular. Philip Zhao on the bounce.
As a soccer coach, you're no stranger to developing your players. But how are you developing your own expertise? As a United Soccer Coaches member, you receive access to a range of resources, like our online learning platform, The Training Ground, to aid in the growth and enhancement of your coaching skills and career. From coaching education courses to lifestyle services, take advantage of new opportunities and member benefits with an annual United Soccer Coaches membership for just $125. Join the home of all coaches today at unitedsoccercoaches.org.
Welcome back to the United Soccer Coaches podcast, where I'm so pleased to be joined by somebody that I met the early doors of me entering U.S. soccer, even as an intern. I'm talking about the great Philip Zhao, who will be entering his 10th year as the head coach of Howard. Of course, recently we had Lincoln Phillips on, not once but twice, because we had to have him back when it was announced he was going in to the Hall of Fame. And when you think of Howard, you think of Lincoln Phillips. And I'm trying to think, Philip Zhao, when did you first meet Lincoln Phillips? As I welcome you into the United Soccer Coaches podcast, it's so great to see your beautiful smiling face, my man.
Hey, man. Thank you so much, Dean. Listen, I've known Coach Phillips all my life. Do you know that my father played for him?
No way.
Yeah, no, I'm not kidding you. I've known Coach Phillips since I was a little boy. As a matter of fact, he's the biggest reason why I went to Howard University. Coach Phillips was always telling me I had to go to Howard University. You have to go to Howard University. Anyway, make a long story short, he left in 1981, and his assistant coach became the coach. So Coach Tucker also started recruiting me, came to my house. I signed the letter of intent, and I went to Howard University. And the story begins, you know. But I've known Coach Phillips. My father played for him, and I played for him in high school. Even a little bit after that, I played for him at for the Maryland Bays. You know, Maryland Bays, he was the head coach before Pete Coringi stepped in. So I've known him all my life.
You're hearing the wonderful voice of Philip Zhao, who I need to remind you, he's also in the Maryland Soccer Hall of Fame. And Philip, you know, I think of you now as this great coach, but I also think of you as this proud father, because you have a son that's playing pro. You have a daughter that's playing pro. They both had multiple looks, I think, with the red, white, and blue, just like you did. And then that reminds me of the time that you were wearing red, white, and blue. You're one of my favorite players, and you were right there kind of on the edge like that entire time. You know, Philip, as you look back, you know, any regrets, as, you know, you were so close, I think, to being on the 90 team, the 94 team. I mean, you were right there, my man.
You know, I mean, like, soccer is all subjective, right? It all depends on what the coach is looking for at that time. And I think 1990 was my best chance because I was the league MVP. We had just won the national title. I was the league MVP, and I was on the team all the way to the end. And then, you know, Coach Gansler selected the team, and unfortunately, I wasn't on it. But listen, I mean, U.S. soccer has done so much for me. I'm just thankful to be a part of it. I really don't have any regrets because through soccer, I met people like you, Coach Phillips. I mean, Nicole. I can go on and on and on and on. So I don't have any regrets at all. My son, Joseph, played on the national team. He played U14, U15, U17, U18, U20, U23, and senior team, you know? And my daughter played U14, U15, U17, U18, U20. She was the U18 national team captain, ended up going to Duke and playing for Robbie Church. Robbie Church, let me tell you, I'm not even talking about him as a great coach, which he is. He's a great coach. But man, let me tell you, Dean, he's a better person, you know? I mean, I love that man with all my heart, and so does my daughter. And then so through soccer, I've been able to get all these things. I played with Mike Brady. I played with John Kerr Jr. in high school. They're my friends, my best friends till this day. And so the story goes on. I love soccer. Soccer has done so much for me in this country, and I'm just thankful.
Well, and it leads to special moments because I know that you couldn't make every Duke game, Philip, but I don't think there was a Duke game that I called when Mia was playing where I didn't mention you. Like I just had to because, you know, I saw her and I would think of you. I'm sure you heard that, right, during some of those Duke games.
Oh, man. Yes, of course, Dean. And then even the ones that I didn't see, people would see it and they said, oh, the announcers were hailing you out. I'm so thankful. Man, you're such a great guy, Dean. Man, listen, you're positive. You've done so much for soccer in this country, and you continue to do it. And then so we love you and we thank you, man. We appreciate you too, man.
Well, it's right back at you because, I mean, like we talked about before we came on the air, like right when you and I met, there was an immediate connection. And also, you know, Desmond was around a little bit. Jimmy Banks was around a little bit. You know, yeah. I loved all the guys, and you guys were tight and you were good to me. And so it was easy to be good to you. And I've loved every moment of it for sure, Philip. And you continue to do great things at your alma mater, Howard. Why was it important to you to go back to Howard and lead that team? Now you're headed on 10 years, my man.
Yeah, you know, when I first started, we were in deep trouble. We were on APR. I don't know if you know what that is. We were on APR. And then so goal was to just get the kids graduating at 100%, you know, and then make sure that the environment was right for them to do something after they graduated. And then so I can proudly say, since I've been at Howard, we've never dropped below a 3.0. And currently my team GPA is a 3.5. Obviously, we want to win more than what we are, but it's kind of difficult because the players that Howard was getting back in the day, they used to get the Nigerian international. That kid is going to Europe. And now all the other schools are recruiting those same players. And then so it's kind of difficult because then also when I go to a tournament, I'm only recruiting from like maybe 15% of the public because Howard is an HBCU. You know what I mean? And then so it's kind of difficult. And then the top young Black kids are being picked off by schools like Duke, UVA, and things like that. So it's kind of tough, but I still enjoy it. Since I've been at Howard, every single one that has come in for me has graduated and is doing well. So I'm happy about that.
I love that answer, and it doesn't surprise me because that's the kind of person you are. And again, I told you before we came on, I was so moved by going to the Black Soccer Coaches event. Never has it been more vibrant. And look, Philip, now look at the women's team. I mean, the foundation of the women's team at the U.S. level, I mean, is more Black players than white players, the true foundation. Look at the men's team, same thing. And now hopefully we're getting more coaches representation because if we're going to have this many Black players, they need to be able to look at people that look like them to lead them, right, Philip?
I'm so happy because Just think about back in the day when we were playing. I think it was just me, maybe Jimmy Banks. I'm trying to think of who else. Robin right. Fraser was on the team when I was playing. I mean, just to see the team the way it is now, I think it's on merit, and they're not really just selecting this group or this group. They just are selecting the best players. And whether white or black, I support that team 100%. You know, I would love to get as many black coaches into the college ranks as possible. But, you know, everything takes time. I've got great friends all around, whether they are white or black. Whoever gets what they get, I'm happy for them, you know. And like you talked about Nicole. Nicole is, man, she has done so much for the Black Coaches Association. I can't begin to. She's young, energetic, knowledgeable, caring. I can go on and on and on, man, but she's great. And then so U.S. soccer is taking a big step forward. And I think in this World Cup coming, the team has a chance to maybe reach deep in the World Cup. I mean, it was disappointing the way it ended up this past World Cup, but they did well. I thought they did well. The future is bright for this team, man, because everyone is, you know, we have a bunch of guys playing in Europe. We've got guys doing well in the MLS. Back in the day, if you have a U.S. player, oh, maybe he's sitting on the bench in Europe. He's not playing. He's making an appearance here and there. But now we have major playing. We have major players all over the world, and that is great to see.
It's also great to see, and we touched on it earlier, but Lincoln Phillips will go into the United Soccer Coaches Hall of Fame. I've had the great honor now, 13 years of being the co-MC for the event, so I'll be up on the stage when the great Lincoln Phillips walks up there. I know you believe he deserves it, right? Lincoln Phillips headed into our Hall.
Oh, man, Dean, listen. This man has done so much. I used to be his counselor. I was a camp counselor for Coach Phillips. I played for him for Columbia Cougars. Me, Sheldon, Sean, Derek Phillips was my assistant coach at Howard. Coach Phillips has done so much for the soccer community, did so much for Howard University, did so much for me. Man, Dean, I'm lost for words, but he deserves everything. Remember, I was there in the room when he won that Lifetime Achievement Award, and I was in a room, and you know, Coach Phillips was also in a room with me when we won the Local Heroes in the MLS All-Star Game, right? And I was with him at that time. He's been like a father. He's always worried about me, you know, like as a parent, and he's very close to my father. My father passed away, of course, and now he's taken that role as a stepfather, a father. And he's a great man, and he deserves more, you know. I think that U.S. soccer should find some kind of role for him as an ambassador to the program. So he just doesn't even have to do coaching courses or whatever, but he just goes and he'll make appearances and talk about U.S. soccer and the history of it and everything else and get paid for doing that, you know. I think he deserves something like that. Really, really, he does. He does.
I agree. Just two more questions for the great Philip Zhao. My face hurts because I'm smiling so big because I'm talking to Philip Zhao, a man I love. And I feel like, you know, we could go 10 years without seeing each other and pick it right up, Philip. So it makes me so happy to have my face hurt because you're making me smile. It used to be called the NSCAA. Now it's called United Soccer Coaches. What has that organization meant to Philip Zhao?
Man, that organization has helped so many. I mean, like in education, you name it, I can go on and on, you know. The coaches in America are getting better and better and better, and to a point where we're beginning to develop world-class players. I mean, we're not up to the level of Europe because they've got all the facilities. They had the head start. They have the money and everything and the power behind it. But USA is not that far behind. You know, with the developmental academy the way it is, and the developmental academy turned into the MLS Next. And the MLS Next, I'm telling you, Dean, the level of play is excellent. I mean, I was at not the last one, but the one before. They had it at the Soccerplex, right? And I'm watching these games, and I'm watching the level of play and the athleticism and the tactical awareness of these players. I mean, it just brings tears to my eyes, you know? When I was playing back in the 80s, late 70s and 80s, if you played soccer, you were like, what? You play soccer? What is that? You know what I mean? But But now, man, I can honestly say in the next 10 years, soccer is going to be the most, I mean, with football, and it is already anyway, with the women and men, it's right up there, you know? And I'm just so thankful and just so grateful to be a part of it.
Awesome. Philip Zhao, the last thing, and we touched on it already, but because your daughter went to Duke, I got to see your wife there and your family there, and I would see you every once in a while, but it's hard, right? Because you're also coaching. But make no mistake, Philip Zhao, you have always put family first. That's kind of who you are. In fact, I was thinking about it as I was reaching out to Lincoln Phillips to make sure I tracked you down. He said, hey, you know, it's not easy to always get him. And then you very eloquently explained part of the reason is whether it's your family or when you're doing a session, you are focused on them. And I love that about you, my man.
Man, I thank you so much, Dean. You know, I'm doing a session right after this. Like I get Andy Sullivan, Emily Fox, Jeremy Ibobisi, all these top class players come over here and they train with me. And this guy, his name is Paul Torres. He used to play with Joseph. I groomed him as a youngster. And now he's retired and he's becoming a coach. He's doing so well. So we have this training program in Maryland. We do this every day in the evening. And then I'm having Howard. And then so when I'm coaching, I just don't like to have the phone in my hand because then somebody's going to ring and then you're talking on the phone and the kids will always say, oh, he's always on the phone. I just don't want that, you know? And then so I'd leave the phone in the car. And then when I come back to the car, I'd miss like 10 calls. And it's very difficult for me to just return. But, you know, I've got to get better. That one there, I've got to get better, you know? But I knew when you emailed me and then as soon as you called, I responded with an email. I left my phone number and we just kept on playing phone tag, email. And then, so I'm just so happy that we connected, man. You are one of the greats, man. You are one of the greats. And I saw that about you when I first met you. You're such a great person, Dean. Really, every time I see you on the TV set, whatever, you calling a game, I just say, you know what, man? I know that guy, man. I know that guy.
Well, I actually do. I do that even more for you. In fact, I'm going to encourage people to try to find YouTube video of Philip playing. He was so dynamic, played with so much joy. He's continued to bring that joy. And to be fair, Philip, you deserve a ton more awards and recognition for what you do. But I know you don't care about that, which is, I think, another great way to describe how awesome you are. This has been great. I got to go try to figure out how to fix my face from smiling so much. Philip Zhao, it's an honor to have you on the United Soccer Coaches podcast, my man. All my love to your family this holiday season, and let's keep in touch, okay?
Okay, D, man. Thank you so much for having me, and I appreciate you, man. We love you, man. You're the greatest, man. I'm telling you.
You're the greatest, Philip. I can tell you that and mean it. When we return, we meet the final two presenters out of seven presenters that are doing 10 sessions as part of the Joe Cummings-led Modern Club Administration and Management Diploma that will take place during the convention this early January in Anaheim. Up first will be Carlos Acebe from the Vision Soccer Academy. He's running two sessions, one called Club Expansion, one called Tapping into Alternative Revenue Streams for Your Club, and then we'll end spending time with Blake Decker. He's running two sessions. One's called Activating Club Mission, Vision, and Values, and one is called Activating Club Philosophy and Curriculum. That's how we'll wrap up our show, and we'll meet Carlos Acebe when we return.
Does it feel like all you're doing to manage your team, club, or league is busy work? If so, League Apps can help you get back to doing what you love, delivering a powerful yet simple youth sports management platform. From robust registration and payment tools to automated communications and other software integrations, League Apps saves you time and headaches. Less busy work, more time doing what you love. Go to leagueapps.com to learn more. League Apps is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the United Soccer Coaches Podcast.
Welcome back to United Soccer Coaches Podcast, where over the last several weeks, we have met the presenters that are going to be part of an exciting diploma led by the former CEO of United Soccer Coaches, Joe Cummings. The diploma's name is Modern Club Administration and Management. The 10 sessions presented by seven presenters will take place during the convention in early January out in Anaheim. Today, we're doubling down as we've got Carlos Acebe and then also Blake Decker. And that means, full stop, we will have interviewed all seven of the presenters that Joe Cummings put together. So with that, Carlos, delighted to catch up with you, as you'll have two sessions, one on Thursday at 1 o'clock called Club Expansion. I'm excited to get into that. And then you'll have one on Friday at 1:30 called Tapping into Alternative Revenue Streams for Your Club. And that's a topic that all of us, you know, kind of keep our eye on and try to find a sort of magic formula for. But most importantly, I love that you're out in Iowa. It's one of my favorite places, having been at the Big Ten Network for 17 years. And it's great to be with you, Carlos. Thanks for being on the United Soccer Coaches podcast.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Before we get into Joe calling you and you stepping up for not one, but two of these 10 courses that is part of this exciting diploma, Carlos, tell me your story. I got excited about the fact that you're in Des Moines. I got excited about the fact that your family's from Bolivia. My wife grew up in Brazil. So tell us your story. Don't leave anything out. It's a podcast, my man. We got time.
Well, I don't know that my story is too exciting, but we'll start from as far back as I can really recall. Grew up in Des Moines, Iowa. I was actually born in Evanston, Illinois. As I mentioned to you earlier, my father came in the mid-60s to New York from Bolivia. And then my mom followed a few years later. They were actually married by proxy. So that was kind of interesting to learn. I didn't know that till actually much later in life. And the story of my parents coming from South America, leaving everything they knew to start a family and life here in the United States, which can be very scary and intimidating. You know, I'm very grateful to them for taking that a plunge. And for me, I grew up again in Des Moines, Iowa, played soccer throughout my youth, played high school locally, went on to play junior varsity at Washington University for Scott Ream, whose son Tim is a professional football player. Ty Keogh was also the head coach at the time, so I had a little bit of interaction with Ty during my time in St. Louis. Moved back to Des Moines, started working actually in a soccer specialty business. Our peak, we had 5 stores, 4 in Iowa, actually 1 in Minnesota. While I was working there, I was coaching for a local club, and I started doing that right after college, basically. So I've been a part of the game for many years. I coach high school. I've been part of a high school program for 20 years. Same school district. We just started a new high school a few years back. I've been a part of that same school district for now 20 years. And then my current role with Vision Soccer Academy, I'm the executive director, and I've served in that capacity for 18 years.
Give me the website for Vision Soccer Academy and kind of in your own words, what you want Vision Soccer Academy to stand for.
So it's visionsocceracademy.com. It's a club that basically started in the western suburbs of Des Moines, but it was a very small town when we first started the club. I've only been a part of the organization for 18 years. It started officially or formally in 1996. I was probably operating in some capacity for a few years before that time. And it was a very small town feel, really. They played out in a cornfield, basically. There was no irrigation. There was about 18 acres of land, and it was kind of not flat. And so it was off of gravel. People had to drive 3 miles on gravel. We would get calls on our voicemail to tell us to fix it, try to fix the gravel or in some capacity. Basically, they wanted us to pave a road. If you can imagine a small club financially trying to do something like that, it wasn't going to happen. We tried to work with the city a little bit, but that never materialized. Eventually, we moved closer into town. And once we did that, we grew exponentially. So we had 1,000 kids when we first moved into our new home, basically, that's inside of the Waukee area that's growing. It's a big town now. It's not as big as some of the other cities close by, but it's a big booming community. We now are at 1,800 players. So we've seen tremendous growth in just 8 years. And then what we really want to be known for is just that we want to maintain our community feel. So that's important to us. We don't necessarily just cater to those close by, but that's about 80% of our membership. And then we're looking to continue to really drive things forward in terms of development and offer different pathways for players. So not only do we want to be a home to a recreational player that just wants to play with their friends and have fun, get out, exercise a little bit, we also want to offer opportunities for the best players. And we want to be able to do that in a way that makes sense for those families, in a way that hopefully is mindful that financially we're not going to try to do more than necessary. And so that kind of speaks to the two topics that I'll be presenting at the convention, one having to do with club expansion, because I'll talk more about that, and then also the tapping into alternative revenue sources.
All right, we're going to get into both of those. And I know Joe Cummings is sitting there right now saying, come on, Dean, we got to big pimp those two sessions that Joe is running. But before we do, I do just have to add, and I told you this before we came on the air, having been at the Big Ten Network for 17 years, headed into my 18th. I love Iowa. The Fighting Dave Dionys just won the Big Ten Women's Tournament, you know, twice in the last 3 years, in fact. And I love Lisa Salucci with the field hockey program. I feel like the job that Iowa's done with female athletics is incredible. Of course, you don't have to look any further than Caitlin Clark and the 50,000 that showed up for that outdoor game in Kinney. And I mean, it's one thing to say it, but you live there. I mean, Iowa probably gets a bad rep, Carlos, but I think the place is awesome. Do you agree?
I do agree. I've made it my home, and I don't intend on moving anywhere anytime soon. Although every winter I start thinking a little bit more about what retirement might look like. But really, I mean, we have all our family here, most of our family here, and we've turned it into something that our kids are a part of it. They're still here. Our parents, fortunately, are still around. They're close by. Actually, my parents live 7/10 of a mile away from me, and my in-laws live 3/10 of a mile away from me. And then my brother moved in, and he's about a mile and a half. So we're all very close-knit, close to one another. And yeah, Iowa's our home. We love it. And yeah, you're right. Iowa does get a bad rap. I think we have done fine work. And when I say we collectively, it's not just our club. It's every club that is operating in the landscape. And there are a number of really good individuals helping to promote the game and developing players. And we do quite a bit of collaboration, more so than I would imagine most other states are doing, in terms of what those leagues need to, how they need to function, what the purpose is, and then tweaking things along the way so that, again, we can really enhance the player experience.
Great to be with Carlos Acebe. Joe Cummings, the former CEO. He is obviously in multiple Hall of Fames as well, well-respected. He was charged with creating a diploma at the convention. It's called Modern Club Administration and Management. We have met a lot of the presenters. We meet the final two on today's podcast, including Carlos. Carlos, first off, how did you form a relationship with Joe Cummings, and talk about him reaching out to say, hey, I need you for two as part of this diploma?
I believe, I'm not certain on this, but Andrew McGinnis, who works with Playmetrics now, was a former employee of Joe's at United Soccer Coaches. And I believe Andrew may have put a bug in Joe's ear, is my understanding. I'm not sure. So I'm thankful to Andrew. He's been a good friend of mine recently that over the years, we've known each other just, again, through our relationship with United Soccer Coaches. And then he moved on, and I started working with Playmetrics right at the start when they first started getting big. And Andrew came on as an executive for them, and he's been with them and doing great work. And we've had good conversations for the last few years. He's an Iowa person as well, so that there's a connection there. So I believe that's how it all started. I may be making it up. I don't think that's the case, but that I believe that's how Joe was calling me to be a part of this.
That makes sense to me. I'm a big fan of Andrew's as well. So we're on the same page on multiple levels here, Carlos. But it'll be Thursday at 1:00. It's called Club Expansion. And man, that is a heady topic, one that you got to be careful with, right? Because you don't want to get too big too fast. You got to do it right. Break down kind of what you want people to take away from that part of the diploma, Modern Club Administration and Management.
My initial thought is to turn it more into a story and to really allow for participation, because everyone's considered it at some point in time. I can't imagine that you're a club operating in today's landscape and you've not been approached by someone else, or you've not thought about it on your own, whether it's working with an MLS team academy, or whether it's working with your crosstown rival, or maybe coming together with some other smaller entities. Whatever the case may be, everyone's considered it. And so for us, it was a matter of understanding where we were in the landscape and what we were trying to accomplish. And so one, the landscape is changing dramatically. As you know, there is so much going on. They call it the alphabet soup of leagues. And we were basically on the outside looking in. Iowa for many years, this is probably 5-10 years ago, it was probably not conceivable for us to be a part of ECNL or the GA or MLS Next or any of those. That was just not something that was going to happen unless all of our clubs came together and produced basically the best talent and try to make that work. And that wasn't just, that just wasn't feasible to think that players from all around the state were going to come together and train and play and make it happen. So 5-10 years ago, again, it wasn't probably conceivable. And then just recently, we just recognized that we needed to improve where we were as a club because we did get into ECNL. And our first year was decent because we had some good older age teams, but our younger teams were struggling. And once those teams aged out at the older age groups, we were struggling mightily. And so we knew that we had to do something. We talked to basically another large organization close by, about 20, 30 minutes away in Ankeny. And it was Iowa Rush, basically, that was the club that we worked with. And we just started having conversations. So really the lecture, I wouldn't call it even that. It's a discussion. It's supposed to be open in my mind to have participation. And we're gonna dive into what that story was, how it started, how it got consummated ultimately, and where we are today.
Based on that description of the takeaway, Carlos, I can't think of a better person to run that part of it, of the diploma club expansion. That's outstanding, as you've fought the fight and got Iowa and your club where you needed to be. I love it. Okay. And then on Friday, it's called Tapping Into Alternative Revenue Streams for Your Club. Take your time on this one, because I think it's one of those things where so many clubs have been trying to figure that out, and it's hard to figure out, Carlos.
Yeah, it is. I think it starts really with understanding what's happening overall in the sports landscape. So everything really filters down from the top. So when we talk about the top, we're saying the professional teams and leagues that exist. We know that revenue streams for bigger clubs and teams really starts with broadcasting rights. And if you think about broadcasting rights, does that filter down to college? Yes. To high school, it's starting to more so. And then does it filter down to youth sports? And it does in a way. It may not be able to generate huge sums of money. It's more the impressions and then understanding how you can maybe monetize that piece. So there's the broadcasting piece that we have to factor in. Two, there's sponsorship and naming rights. That is it's now a huge endeavor, and it seems to be somewhat bulletproof in terms of recessions. It seems to be something that companies understand that they need to do something different with their marketing dollars to try to gain access to customers or future customers or whatever it is their objective might be. It might be awareness, and who knows what they have in mind. But ultimately, those are things that are starting to filter down way more now into the youth sports landscape. And so that's a second revenue source or stream. And then there's merchandising, which I think is more realistic at the youth soccer club level than really many people probably anticipate. So we'll talk about how you can leverage partnerships with either local entities or even bigger ones that are out there. But merchandising is something that not only helps generate revenue, but also then helps with your branding. And indirectly, hopefully that helps entice people to want to come play for you, or at least show interest in who you are and what you're about in terms of a club. We don't do ticketing, so there's no real ticketing that's going on or what would be considered game day revenue. But that's another revenue stream that you see with professional leagues and teams that can filter down to a certain degree. So game day revenue, maybe it's concessions. Maybe there's some element of charging to watch games if you video games and do live streams. The game day piece is something that can be very complicated because many of us, in our club included, may not have control of our facility. And so those type of concession dollars go somewhere else, or maybe you have to do some type of a revenue share of some kind. But that's another revenue source that we would describe and talk about. So what's next? I don't know that we'd get into sports betting. I don't think that's a possibility. That wouldn't be something that many clubs would want to hang their hat on in terms of being a part of, especially when we're talking about youth sports. So that's not on, that shouldn't be anything that we discuss, but you never know. Maybe someone is going to find a way to include that somehow, some way. But we're always going to think about what's next and how it relates to our business, especially when we're dealing with youth players. the reality is we're going to talk about those things in terms of game day too. I would say that the membership fees are really where most clubs derive a significant portion of their income, and membership fees, if you rely on them, can make or break your budget. And so you need to be very mindful of diversifying and finding other ways. And so again, those other ways would come by mainly sponsorship dollars, merchandising, and then talking about maybe alternative ways of using your business operations to find dollars. One example could be, we moved away from doing check issuance, and we still rely on it a little bit, but we do more with our credit cards than ever before. That's a way of generating some extra dollars potentially if you do it right. Now, it could be a scary proposition, because if you're not watching how you're spending your dollars and you're not getting track, you're not keeping track of how those dollars are being spent, that could be very problematic and it could hurt you really in the long run. But there are ways to do it, especially if you have good people around you, which we do. And I would anticipate that these ideas are just going to be ideas. People can take hold of it, or they can dismiss it altogether. And that's, I think, the beauty of the convention ultimately is you go and you hear many things, you see many things, and you really need to take away just a few nuggets. You can't do everything. You just take away those things that resonate with you, and then you run with it.
Everything you said there is part of my life. Not everybody knows this, but I have spent equal part broadcasting, equal part in revenue generating, including stadium naming rights. And one of the things that I brought to the ECNL was Continental Tire, and they wanted impressions and they wanted their name on the jerseys of the national selection game. And they are absolutely loving it because people are watching those games, and it doesn't have to be ESPN. At the end of the day, a number is a number, right? And a mom is a mom, and it's making a difference. So you're speaking my language right there, man. I'm going to that session. That's exciting.
I hope so. Again, it's really meant for those that are in an area where they rely heavily on membership fees. And really, the problem that we face is that inflation is around us. We have pressure to raise prices to accommodate increases in salaries, increases in rent, increases in product if you're buying equipment. So we know that that's around us. And so the easy thing to do is just to raise your prices. But ultimately, that gets you into trouble, especially if you're trying to compete with other clubs and other entertainment options or other youth sports organizations, basketball or whatever it might be. Parents and families have choices. So we have to be very cognizant of that.
All right, Carlos Acebe, when you hear these three names, and it used to be called NSCAA, it's now called United Soccer Coaches. What does that mean to you?
It's a resource, and it's rich in knowledge and experience, and you have to take full advantage of it. Going to the convention is one way to do that, and I've been doing it for a number of years now, and I've been on the other side of things where I go and I watch and I listen, and again, I try to take from it, extract what I can to help myself, but also our organization. So the United Soccer Coaches has been able to do that for me personally. And beyond that, it's also about relationships. It's talking and seeing to people. So we do so much virtually now, which personally I like. I enjoy the virtual piece, but you do need to meet with people in person. You have to be able to shake hands. You have to be able to have conversations, sit down, whether it's a lunch, a coffee, whatever it might be. You need to be able to see people face to face. And that's what the convention provides, opportunities to see faces that you don't normally see. And at least you do it once a year.
Finally, if you've listened to the podcast, you know I like the last word, in case you missed it, moment. The name of the diploma, led by former CEO of United Soccer Coaches, Joe Cummings, is called Modern Club Administration and Management. There are 10 unique but awesome sessions led by 7 presenters. Leading 2 of them is Carlos Acebe. On Thursday, 2:00, he'll have club expansion. On Friday, this is the 12th of January. Again, this is all tied to the convention. You know that, folks, because you've been listening to the podcast. It's called Tapping Into Alternative Revenue Streams for Your Club. If they heard nothing else, what would be your answer to the question, why a diploma titled Modern Club Administration and Management would be important for someone to get?
So I'm a big advocate for education. And I believe that you have to continue to evolve. So no matter how old you are, no matter how long you've been doing whatever it is that you're doing, you need to continue to get better. And so this diploma course really is a way to learn new things. Again, pick up one or two things if you can from each, or just one. And imagine if you try to implement one new idea that you learn and you attend 10 courses, that's 10 new ideas that you can incorporate almost immediately and benefit from. And again, it may not be your club initially, it might just be you or a small segment of your club, but you can then test it and then try it and expand on it. And hopefully it's going to manifest in something much, much more for you and your organization.
Great answer, Carlos. You can check out his website one more time at his soccer club there in Iowa. Give me that website one more time, Carlos.
It's visionsocceracademy.com.
All right, check that out. And then more importantly, also check out the two sessions that Carlos will be a part of as part of the Modern Club Administration and Management Diploma. As we say goodbye, every part of this interview I've loved. I traveled over to Central America and South America with Harry Keel. And then when I broke in, it was JP and Ty Keel that did all the U.S. soccer games. So I traveled everywhere with Ty as well. So I love that, for lack of a better word, tie-in that you have as well, Carlos. Those are two legends of the game. Great people, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. And St. Louis is rich in history. It's great to see that they've had good success in their inaugural year of MLS. And I really didn't take full advantage of being in that city when I was there for 4 years. But I love going back, and it was a great place and I had great times there. Many good memories.
Well, we loved having you on this week's podcast and so proud of you for being part of the Modern Club Administration and Management Diploma. Carlos, thanks for being on United Soccer Coaches Podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Dean. Appreciate it very much.
Certainly appreciate Carlos, and definitely appreciate Joe Cummings for overseeing this Club Management and Administration Diploma as part of the convention. We have just one more presenter to meet that is part of this diploma, again, led by Joe Cummings, and that is Blake Decker. He'll run two on Friday. One called Activating Club Mission, Vision, and Values, and one called Activating Club Philosophy and Curriculum. Blake Decker is with Cincinnati United SC, and we meet him to wrap up the show after this message.
The home of all coaches is headed to Anaheim, California. Join us at the 2024 United Soccer Coaches Convention, held January 10th through the 14th. For our first time on the West Coast in over 5 years, we're pulling out all the stops with brand new special topics diplomas, world-class presenters like Randy Waldrum and Carla Thompson, one-of-a-kind pop-ups, 200-plus education sessions, and so much more. Register now by going to UnitedSoccerCoachesConvention.org. Register before December 14th to beat the price increase and join us in Anaheim.
Welcome back to the United Soccer Coaches Podcast. You just heard from Carlos Acebe, and as I said, we saved the best for last, all seven presenters as part of the Joe Cummings Club Management Administration Diploma that will take place at the convention have now been heard on the United Soccer Coaches Podcast, or at least they will be heard after we welcome in Blake Decker. Blake, thanks for being on the United Soccer Coaches Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Dean. Glad to be here.
Yep. Blake's going to double down on Friday. He's got one session at 11 a.m. called Activating Club Mission, Vision, and Values. And then he's got another one on Friday at 3:15 called Activating Club Philosophy and Curriculum. Just like we did with Carlos, we'll get to those. But first, I want to get to know Blake Decker a little bit better, Blake, and I'll do it exactly like I did it with Carlos. It's a podcast. You have some time. Tell us your story, where you grew up, how you got into soccer. Did you play in college and how you ended up where you are right now?
Yeah, sure. Originally from the southwest suburbs of Chicago, around the game for as long as I can remember. So I'm the youngest of three boys. Early memories of being dragged around from field to field, and then started playing when probably 4 or 5 years old. Back then, we played 11v11, even at that age. So that's how far back it goes. Played youth in Chicago, ended up playing collegiately at a small Division III school in Fulton, Missouri, Westminster College. After college, moved back to Chicago and was actually getting ready to study for the LSAT and had plans to go to law school. And a former coach of mine Alex Hernandez, who was the director of coaching at Lyons Township Soccer Club at that time, said, hey, I got a couple teams that need a coach. What are your thoughts? And I said, okay, I'll give it a shot. The rest is history, as they say. I never went to law school, Dean.
Well, but you did end up in Cincinnati. Before we came on the air, I told you that I went to the Bengals-Jacksonville game, and you admitted that you're a Bears guy, so it didn't really matter what the Bengals are doing. But Cincinnati's a cool place. How long have you been there, and what's your title there?
I've been here since 2020. Currently serve as the chief executive officer. So I didn't necessarily start in this role. Didn't come here by way of Chicago either. So moved to St. Louis in 2007. Ended up going into the classroom for a bit. Obviously, growing up in Chicago, and as I mentioned, you know, where my first contacts came through a former coach. I didn't have that same network in St. Louis, so moved there and was in the classroom for about 5 years while also coaching with a club called Metro United. And eventually, the year after I got there, U.S. Soccer started the DA. So I started coaching for Metro United in there. That got folded into St. Louis Scott Gallagher, and then eventually into St. Louis FC, which was the USL side. So my last position in St. Louis was an academy director for the USL team. A lot of change in that market, positive change as well with MLS coming in, some negative change through COVID and what everybody experienced there, just opened up the potential of a different opportunity. I left St. Louis and went to Cincinnati United first as the girls director there, which was something not new, but different because I had been in the boys game pretty much from the time I arrived in St. Louis, coached in the female game when I was in Chicago. Did that role for about a year, and through a restructure of the organization and a reorganization, had the opportunity to become the chief executive officer, which is the position I currently serve in.
You're enjoying it?
I am, very much.
Okay, great. Well, along the way, you clearly made an impression on important people because, you know, Joe Cummings, a Hall of Famer, former CEO for United Soccer Coaches. How were you able to make the connection with Joe to be a part of this club management administration diploma that'll take place during the convention?
Joe and I never met directly, but we knew a lot of the same people, and maybe didn't know that we knew a lot of the same people until I think he started to conceptualize this idea and started having some conversations. And when he and I first spoke on the phone, what he shared with me is just that he asked a handful of people, and my name had come up more than once, and we, you know, reminisced about who those people were and what our relationships were them and how they had affected us. I think it's just the nature of sport, particularly soccer. The relationships are so important because we're never too far removed from anybody, even if we haven't met them within this game, especially if you're passionate about it and you've been doing it for a while. The connections are never, you know, more than a few steps removed.
Never, ever. All right. Well, let's dive in. As I mentioned, you're doing double duty on Friday as there are 10 sessions, 7 different presenters. Blake's got 2 of them. His first one on Friday, 11 a.m., is called Activating Club Mission, Vision, and Values. If you could, please give us a synopsis of what you want people to take away from that session.
Not to jump ahead, both sessions, the overlying theme is going to be about what's in a PowerPoint versus what's in reality, right? What's in the field and what's in your relationship. So the choice of the word activating is very intentional, because I think you'd be hard done to find any youth sports organization, whether it's be soccer or another, that doesn't have a mission statement or vision or values. But really the key is how do you implement those to create a culture and decision-making processes that are consistently aligned with those. I'm a convert to this. There's not going to be much original in it. These are things that I've learned from being around great leaders within specifically St. Louis Scott Gallagher, also St. Louis FC, but in Cincinnati United as well. Business leaders and people that were around the club, right? Some from a soccer perspective, some just from a leadership perspective, and some of those best practices of how do you use mission, vision, values, A, to create a culture that you want, B, to consistently make decisions that are aligned with who you are as an individual. And how do you do that when you're dealing with thousands of players and hundreds of coaches? It's one thing to do that within a team environment where you're dealing with 18 players. That's hard enough. But when you're talking about organizational leadership. If you don't have essentially what's foundation, filter, and guardrails, mission, vision, values, it becomes nearly impossible. So how do you take those things and turn them into really net positives for your organization?
Great job from Blake Decker, not only setting up the first session that he's going to handle on Friday, but also the second one. And you're right, activating is the key word. Activating club philosophy and curriculum. Your synopsis of that session, please.
So these are related, in my opinion. There's not necessarily a right or wrong. Who you are from a club perspective, what your goals are and what your values are, should be reflected in essentially the playing philosophy or the curriculum. I think curriculum often is put first, but it actually should be last because it's the what. And really it's the why and the how that should come first. If you want to be able to distill that out across a number of teams, right? So in both sessions, but particularly in this one, you or I, Dean, could probably knock out a curriculum in, you know, a handful of hours, maybe a few days. But then we would spend all of our time trying to get compliance or teach people how to implement it. And it would take a really long time versus spending your time on the front end and developing that and something that is aligned with your mission, vision, values with staff, and spending that time on the front end to build it, something that's relatable, connected together. And then as you push that out into the organization, you have 20 people pushing it out versus one people trying to dictate a way of playing, a way of coaching, and a way of training, which is how it'll be broken down in that order. Because first, we have to start with the end in mind. Based upon the end that we have to think about, okay, what type of teaching and leading do we need in order to achieve that end? And then it's last, what are we going to do? Curriculum, training, that piece of it. So walking through that process. So you'll see in each of them, there's really three steps: foundation, filters, guardrails, way of playing, way of coaching, way of training, and how you work through that process to, as you said, make sure that it's not just living in a PowerPoint, but it's living on the field every day.
Great to be here with Blake Decker, who is going to be part of the Club Management Administration Diploma led by former CEO of United Soccer Coaches, Joe Cummings. As I mentioned, he's got two sessions on Friday. They both begin with the word activating. The first one is activating club mission, vision, and values. The other one is called Activating Club Philosophy and Curriculum. Blake, in its simplest form, if after these sessions, a week later, a month later, a year later, you learned from one or two people that attended your session that they have in fact activated club mission, vision, and values, club philosophy, and curriculum, how would that make you feel?
In a very concise way, really good, Dean. The objective here is to provide at least some insight or some tools, right? Not the only tools, for individual leaders and organizations to build something that's authentic to them, because I think that's the most meaningful thing. I mean, if you think about what a youth club is, right? People choose to join your organization, right? Staff choose to be a part of your organization. Why do they choose, right? And building something that is unique to your own culture and context, and that not just the club, but your city, your location, the people who you have, the person that you want to be, the team that you want to be. I think it just makes it makes the ability to impact the lives of your players, which is the reason why we're involved in this game, that much more. Because when you're doing something that you've built as a group, and that it is more than just about a training session, there's more authenticity, you're more likely to be able to reach a young person, which I think is why we're involved in this.
You're hearing Blake Decker, who is the CEO with Cincinnati United SC and one of the seven key presenters for the Joe Cummings-led diploma that'll be part of the convention in Anaheim under the auspices of Club Management Administration, as we've met everybody now, including Blake Decker. Blake, because all of this falls under the auspices of United Soccer Coaches, I need to ask you, when you hear those three words, United Soccer Coaches, what do those three words mean to Blake Decker?
The most important thing that we can do for our staff or for our coaches or for our players is to develop ourselves, It's something that we ask every single day. If we start as coaches of our players, right? And then as we're directors, we ask it of our coaches. And if we're a leader in technical sense, we ask it of our directors. When I think of United Soccer Coaches, I think of people that are choosing an opportunity to develop themselves and to grow themselves. And I think that's probably the most impactful thing that we can do to affect our organizations, because it's example. It's leadership by example. And it's saying that I can still be better. I can still learn. Going back to this idea of authenticity, when I now ask for a little bit more or for somebody to go outside their comfort zone as a leader, as a coach, it means so much more because I'm willing to do that myself. That's what I think of when I think of United Soccer Coaches.
That works for me. And finally, as we say goodbye, knowing that we've been able to spend time with all seven presenters as part of this Joe Cummings-led diploma out in Anaheim, if people only heard what you have to say right now about what it would mean to them by going and getting this diploma in Anaheim, if they only heard what you said right now, what would you want to leave them with?
Yeah, I would want to leave them with, it's so much more valuable, enjoyable when you build something that's your own. And when I say your own, I don't mean any one individual. I mean a group of individuals that can create something that is unique to their organization. It just will lead to a different level of satisfaction and passion in my experience. And that level of satisfaction and passion transmits into your staff, your coaches, your players, your members, and really highlights what it means to be a part of a club.
Double Down with Blake Decker on the Friday of Convention Week. That is January 12th at 11 a.m., activating club mission, vision, and values. And then he's back at it at 3:15, also on January 12th. That's a Friday, activating club philosophy and curriculum. Blake Decker, love your path. Glad to hear that you're in Cincinnati doing great things with Cincinnati United SC, and really appreciate you getting involved with United Soccer Coaches as part of this diploma. And finally, thank you for being on the United Soccer Coaches podcast.
I've enjoyed it, Dean. Thanks for having me. See you in Anaheim.
Look forward to seeing you in Anaheim and seeing everybody that's listening that is headed to Anaheim. Please stop by and say hello to me on Podcast Row. Also want to thank Brandon Milburn and all the great people at United Soccer Coaches. I need to thank my producer, Colin Thrash, and I need to thank you, our members. In fact, for each and every one of you, I'm Dean Linke. We'll see you next week for another edition of the United Soccer Coaches podcast presented by League Apps.
Thanks for listening to the United Soccer Coaches podcast, presented by League Apps. League Apps is the leading youth sports management platform, providing organizations with the technology and professional development they need to run, grow, and win. To learn more about League Apps, find them at leagueapps.com or as League Apps on all of the social networks. And to learn more about United Soccer Coaches, visit us at unitedsoccercoaches.org.